This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
All right, everybody. His name is Jason. My name is Dan Johnson, Jason Thibodeau, Dan Johnson. And together we are the How to Hunt Deer podcast. So I thought like holiday weekends were supposed to be relaxing and fun. And although I had some fun, I don't feel like I necessarily did any relaxing at all.
No, it's chaotic. That's, I mean, just in a nutshell, you know, I mean, I don't know about you. Once you've seen fireworks, you've kind of seen them all, you know, and I'll still go, you know, the kids enjoy them and everything. And if it's a really good display, you know, I'll enjoy it. But, you know, if it's just the middle of the road, average small town, they're all the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll tell you what our weekend consisted of. Friday, the whole family was excited to go see the Savannah Bananas. Okay.
Oh, cool.
And they played at Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City. They've been doing this thing where they've been going to football stadiums and selling out everything. All right. So we get there, we hang out with some friends for a little bit, we get in line, and there's so many people down there that the mobile data on the cell phones aren't working, right? And so we're in line, my brother and his kids and family, they get in, and so my wife can't pull them up. So I grab the phone, I walk way up the road till I get them on the screen, I walk back down. Lightning starts striking and they shut down getting into the stadium.
Yeah.
It then proceeded to lightning strike and rain, and which we were not like prepared for. So we just sat in the line and ate rain for like 45 minutes. Then we left the line and went and hung out in like a, against the stadium walls, and were there for another hour or so. And so essentially it was a 2.5 hour rain delay, which we were outside and soaking wet the whole time. And here's the crazy part. I don't know, maybe you have any insight in this. Every time the lightning would strike, they said, okay, 30 minutes. We're starting the clock at 30 minutes, starting the clock. But at 9 o'clock, they started the game anyway and started letting people in anyway, which is absolutely crazy to me. So they delayed all the way up till 9 o'clock. Then at 9 o'clock, they said they started letting people in and starting the game, even though there was still lightning going on.
Yeah, so my guess would be that they don't want to reschedule and they don't want to refund money.
Yeah, exactly. But then they're saying to us, well, it's just policy. It's policy. It's policy up until somebody starts talking about losing money, and then it's policy no longer matters. I don't understand. And so there was a lot of people who were frustrated because there was no information being sent to they would make announcements in the stadium, but nobody could hear the announcements outside. And there was, anyway, long story short, we got soaking wet. We went into the stadium. My youngest son was the only one who was really excited to be there. And then after about like 30 minutes to an hour, he was like, I'm cold. I want to go home. And my wife was shivering. I was shivering. Like, dude, it was 75 degrees out, and I thought my wife was going to get hypothermia. It was crazy.
It was crazy how much rain we got in like 2 days there. I don't know about you. I think we ended up with like 4 inches of rain, which of course the pond flooded and we had to deal with all that. We had trees down and limbs down and stuff. So we cleaned up stuff yesterday.
Yeah.
We ended up going to fireworks what was it? Saturday night, and I took all the kids. She stayed home with the baby, and you know, that's, I hate that part too, because it's like we want to do the stuff together, but yet it's bedtime, and we don't know if she's gonna scream, and so it's a little chaotic. And then yesterday, you know, we went to church, and they had a like a hot dog luncheon thing in the basement, and then they had ice cream truck and slip and slide stuff for the kids outside. So we did that, and then we came home and swam in the pool. And then, man, I did the last, Thursday and yesterday, I did these weighted pack runs. It's just like a weighted vest, you know?
Yep.
And I've been trying to get in a couple of them a week. And so Thursday I did like 2.5 miles, and I was, my shoulders were sore, and then just my whole body was sore. And then yesterday I actually did 5K yesterday. And it's funny, 'cause like all the kids, well, the oldest daughter, she's the one who initiates all of it. She's like, I'm going for a run. So then the next two girls, they go with her, you know, and they all run 2 miles. And then my son, he's out there, he's running in his Crocs. He runs 2 miles in his Crocs. And he's telling me, Dad, my toe's bleeding all over. And I'm like, yeah, because you're running without socks on, dude. And you're running in Crocs. And so we all got a run in. We got some swimming time in. Then we grilled out, and we had a wet campfire. You know, we had found some dry wood, but it was good. But, you know, everything goes too fast.
Yeah. So that was Friday, and then Saturday was the 4th, and it was it almost felt like it was an entire day of rushing so that we could go to the fireworks. So at 5 o'clock we went to like some of the kids on my son's baseball team and hung out with the parents there while they rode around and had fun. And, I mean, it was great, but there was no relaxing. It was all like events and scheduled. And even yesterday, my wife was like, hey, everybody's just chilling. And she's like, I'm antsy. Let's go do something fun. And then, so we went to a putt-putt golf, which I appreciate her, because she's like, if it wasn't for her, we would have just sat in the house and did nothing all day, which I kind of wanted, but whatever. And then we had wrestling last night. And so now we're back into it. And I just felt like nothing. It was just like a full rush. It was almost like rushing to relax or rushing to have fun and things like that. And I'll tell you this, I still do not have my trail cameras up. Another quick note, I am not getting a new bow this year. Once again, I'm going to be, I just took my bow to the shop, got a new string put on it. Dude, what happened to bow strings?
You like, tell me.
They're $180.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah. So I'm just like, okay, whatever. I got a new one. I got the middle of the road one. There was one that was $200 and some bucks. And then there was another one that was like $150. So I went with the one that was $180. And, I just am like, dude, so I get these little bank statements, like that get sent to me they say at the end of the month, and they say, you've spent $1,700 more this month than you did the previous month. And I'm just like, oh my God, what is going on?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
tell me about it.
Yeah. Whatever. That's life, right? You can't take it with you, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I really don't.
I don't know.
I mean, anyway. do you have a retirement plan?
Kind of, but it's not really like anything to like bat an eye at. You know, it's like my goal is to at least get my house paid off so they can't kick me out of here when I get old.
I think that's the thing. You get to a point to where you hopefully have your house paid for, and hopefully your vehicles are paid for, to where you're just like, you know, paying utilities and just paying to survive at that point. But I looked at our daughter the other day, the newborn, and I was like, you are probably the reason I will never retire.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and you know, that's self-inflicted, but I really think that I wasn't going to retire anyways.
Yeah.
I don't think there's enough money that a guy could have away with having a family and responsibility and house and all that. You know, I think there's other ways you could, but
I don't know.
Inheriting money.
Yeah. Now that's, I don't know. My dad and my father-in-law, they all had really good jobs and my dad worked his ass off, and so did my father-in-law, for the money. But like, They were, you know, my dad was, I can remember weeks, my dad was working like 80 hours a week. And same with my father-in-law. He was working like, shift and a half, up until he turned 55, which he retired at 55 because John Deere had an early buyout of that. Yeah. We can retire early and then you still get your pension and all this stuff. And he took it. So mm-hmm. he's been retired, but that doesn't mean that he just quit working. But anyway, we don't want to talk about that today. We want to talk about deer hunting. And before we get into that, we have the new partner of the podcast, and that's Reveal Trail Cameras. Man, I've been using Reveal Trail Cameras now for specifically for, what has it been, like 5 years now? Close to
that,
five?
That was the number I had with, I think. Yeah. My first one was about 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years ago. And so here in August, they're going to be releasing some new cameras with some new battery options. Keep a lookout for that because it's going to be some really badass stuff. What I love about Reveal is that you scan a QR code. First, you download the app. Obviously, you got to put batteries in it or have the batteries charged or whatever. And then you scan a QR code. It connects to the app automatically, and you have a fully functioning cellular trail camera in a matter of minutes. Like, do you remember back in the day when you had to, like, go get a SIM card and then enter in, like, a 26-number identification code into the camera by using up and down arrows? It would take almost all day to go get one set up, and then there still wasn't a chance that it worked. So I love Reveal. They work awesome. They are a fully functioning ease of use trail cameras that sends me pictures, and that's right. Ultimately what I'm looking for today. And and so go check out tacticam.com/cameras for all of your trail camera needs. So there's that. All right. Today's topic, we discussed it before we started recording. And I'm going to ask this question to you. Have you ever dedicated an entire season to one buck?
Yes, but I got sidetracked.
Okay. And what does that mean?
Well, I'll go a little bit further and say I dedicated multiple seasons after one buck. There was one buck I in particular wanted, mm-hmm. in particular I really wanted. And we'd watched him from he was 2.5 when we first saw him. And then I think he died at 5.5 or 6.5. I'm not 100% sure on which age he was then, but, mm-hmm. I would see this deer on camera. He was very regular for the first couple seasons, and I thought there has to be a way to get in on him and figure out what days he's there from year to year. Yeah. And so I more or less went specific with, I'm going to hunt certain days given X factors, you know, whether it was wind or whether it was, you know, time of season. And then that's where I would dedicate my time to him. But there was that was on one property, you know, and lo and behold, that, and this is the hardest part of, you know, all this. If you go back last year and you listen to like all the small property tactics and stuff that I would use, like this buck was on 14 acres and there was a house centered in the middle of it, you know? So I had basically a square at the north end and a square at the south end of this long skinny piece to hunt. And there was quite a bit of pressure on the east side of this. And then on the west side, there was a highway, you know? Yeah. So hunting this particular buck was very hard, and using the word dedicating a season to this deer was difficult. But man, I had a lot of success that last year that I saw him as far as connecting all the dots with him. And had I stuck to it, I would have shot him. Yeah. I got sidetracked with, we had picked up a bigger piece of property, the year that he would have been either 5.5 or 6.5, and the bigger property was 435 acres. So it was like, I can go hunt 14 or I can go hunt this other one, you know? And I'm glad I hunted the big piece, because just to sum up my story with this, which we can dive into it a little bit more, but to sum it up, the day that I thought this buck in particular that I was hunting, the day I thought he was going to show up in the area, I thought he was going to show up, he showed up, but I was on the other piece.
Yeah.
You know, I had him on trail camera and stuff coming in, to basically right in front of my stand off of a trail from the neighboring property. And I would have shot him, but that same day I was on another piece and I actually shot a 150 inch 8 point. So, I mean, I can't regret not being, you know, I wish I was there, but how about you?
Man, yes. And it's funny. So in 2008, 2010, 2013, 2014 was a little bit of a weird year because that was back when I was filming back in the day. I was filming all my hunts for the White Knuckle Productions DVDs. And so all of those years I had a camera guy in me, with me, in me. I'm so immature,
right? No, hey dude, my wife says it all the time. She's like, you can literally take anything, can't you? Like,
yep. Oh god. Anyway, I had a camera guy with me in the tree. and so I was filming all my hunts, and one of my promises to him was, you know, you come film me and I will trade you my farms, right? You can come hunt my farms when you draw Iowa. And that was the trade. And so in 2014, he drew. And so I dedicated that year to kind of putting him in some of the best spots. And we chased a absolute giant together that year. And it didn't work out. However, 2008, 2010, 13, and 15, I was chasing like one specific deer, and not the same deer over all of those years, but I dedicated my entire season to one deer. Now, guess what happened in those years? I didn't kill a buck. Uh-huh. Right. I also was so stupid that I was passing deer the caliber in which I had never shot before. So I was chasing 170 plus inch deer on those particular years, and I was passing 150 inch deer, and at that time I'd never shot 150 inch deer before.
Yeah.
So I was dedicated to passing smaller deer, younger deer, to try to get this one particular buck, because that's all I thought about was these deer. And so in 2008 and 2010, it was one specific deer. In 2010, I actually hit that deer, and I wounded him, and I couldn't recover him. The next year, that deer was killed by the neighbor, and he made the cover of North American Whitetail, and he scored 200 inches. So that's one of them. The other ones was in 2013. I chased a gigantic 9 pointer in this river bottom farm that he had like he was a giant mainframe ape, but then he had out of it, which would be like the 1, 2, 3, the 5 point side had like a double crab claw coming out of one side. I'll have to dig through the pictures and see if I can find him and show you, because he's just, his frame is unreal as an 8 pointer, just gigantic, tons of mass, huge body. And then in 14, we didn't kill that one buck we were chasing. And then in 15, I had a really like the start of this non-typical type of junk deer. He had drop tines. He had like, he was a freak. He looked like a cage deer, dude. Like, I'm not joking, just a freak. And so I chased him in 2015. But other than that, I started to learn, like in 2016, I stopped doing it. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, dude, I don't want to chase one deer anymore. I want to, because I feel like you're, because it sucks, right? Let's talk about the pros and cons of chasing one deer. What are the pros and cons of dedicating an entire season to one high caliber buck?
So I'll go with the pros on this first is, I'll go back to the one buck in particular. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've chased a couple of them, but this one I dedicated multiple years, and I had, you know, like done all sorts of stuff from the age of 2.5 to 3.5 to 4.5. At, you know, this buck, he had like 16 points. He had a little drop tines, you know, mm-hmm. he was just something special, you know, and I kept saying if he showed up at 4.5, I would pass him. Right. But at 4.5, he was already 180 inches at 4.5. And by the time he hits 5.5, he blew up frame wise. He lost a couple points, but I still think he was in that 180 to 185. And that would have been the biggest deer I would have taken at that point, you know. The pro of it, though, was from 4.5 to 5.5, I specifically remember like diving into every trail camera picture I had of this deer, writing specific dates down, and then going back and checking wind patterns. And then also checking, you know, the moon phases and stuff. And I had so much correlation with different things and different timing of that deer and when he would use certain draws that were coming through this property and exiting, or certain foods when there's crop rotations, you know, from year to year. The pros of it for me, really, I found a lot of enjoyment out of that one deer. I think that's what really changed it. And we touched on this a little bit last week, was I fine tuned one deer, right? Mm-hmm. And I was able to put myself in a spot to have a shot at this deer. And lo and behold, it would have been November 11th at about 9 a.m. that year. I would have shot him in basically, oh, I don't even know if it was 100 yards from the house. You know, I mean, he was that close. But what turned me off was it wasn't the fact that I was not shooting deer or shooting bucks at that time. Was the fact that I was only learning about one, mm-hmm. right? And just like people, you know, we alluded to it last week, you know, I mean, they all have a different temperament. They all have a different attitude. But what really shifted was that year he was 5.5. There was this, I called him like a bully buck, because he mm-hmm. was just a short time 10, and he was probably a 4.5 year old deer. And he came in and he tore this buck up. I mean, he broke half of his rack off on one side. He broke 3/4 of it off on the other side. So this deer that we'd been chasing for 5.5 years or whatever was destroyed. And I ended up seeing that deer January 4th out in a cornfield feeding. And he had one brow tine, no main beam after that. And then he had part of a main beam on the other side. And I thought that's a walking dead deer, basically, you know. And lo and behold, shed season would come along, and I found the half of his rack that had gotten broken off in that fight, which actually was on the south side of the property and right next to a tree stand that I had there. So all the encounters that I had with this deer, what it taught me was I could learn how to hunt one deer and put myself in position to shoot one deer. But what if I shifted away from a buck and decided I wanted to learn how to hunt the does, and then learn where they bed, learn when they feed? And that actually led to more success at seeing deer that were 130, 140, 150 inches, because those does are the magnet. They're the ones that draw the bucks in. So for me, the con was the fact that I wasn't seeing as many deer.
Yeah. Yeah. Pros and cons of hunting one buck. Okay. For me, the pros were knowing that I wasn't going to pick up my bow unless this one particular buck showed up. Okay. And so the pros were I got to observe a ton of natural deer movement, knowing that I wasn't even going to pick up my bow. And so that meant that instead of going into kill mode when a different buck would show up, I would, you know, I wasn't dedicated one buck per se, as far as I knew what buck I wanted. I knew the path that he ran. I knew all these things, and I was putting myself in position to intercept this one buck. However, if another equally sized buck would have showed up or bigger, I would have shot them, right?
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen most of the time. The buck that I was after was the king shit, right? So anyway, the pros were I got to observe a ton of natural deer movement and I was relaxed. So I got in those moments, I got to be like, okay, look at how these does hug this, or this buck hugs this, this ridge and comes down it. And they always seem to go around this pine tree, or they always seem to go over this log. And then what you do is you're able to slow down and really observe what's going on in the timber. And what that did was it allowed me to micro adjust my tree stand locations. And I was able to like get in there and observe and slow down or look across an open ridge and just be like, what is it that is causing those deer to go through these specific points every time? And that was right around the time where I was really starting to learn about how thermals work. Sunny day, cloudy day, you know, maybe it's a partly cloudy day where the sun is shifting back and forth all the time. And I started learning about, you know, updrafts and downdrafts and what what was going on in the timber in specific wind directions. And just because the weatherman says the wind's out of the north doesn't always mean the wind is going to be coming out of the north, right? And so slowing down and observing, knowing that there's only one deer in this set of timber that I'm going to pick my bow up for. And if he doesn't show up, then I'm not after anything else. All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
See, I found myself actually hunting that specific property a lot less.
Yeah.
By the time I had done the research and put all my data together on this buck, I hunted it a lot less. And I specifically remember a time that I was in the stand on one of the dates in the morning when I thought I could kill him, and I had an Ozonix in the tree with me. And this was like one of my first experiences with Ozonix, is I saw three deer coming my way.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, there was that bully buck that I was just talking about and two does, and they walked past me and out of sight. And so I rattled, you know, once they got out of sight, and that bully buck went right in to about 24 yards. And knowing where I was at, I elected to not shoot that deer because I had one deer on my mind, you know, but it also opened my eyes to like a different sense and maybe different tactics with calling and stuff. But it also told me, because that was on November 6th that year. And if I stuck to the game plan that year, the big one that I'm after, 5 days later, he dies. But what I didn't realize until after the fact is he was already missing half of his rack. You know, that buck had already, the bully buck had already come in, moved him, you know, pushed him around, and they'd already established some sort of dominance. But the one I was after never really left. Like, he was holding his own. He just wasn't holding his own on his head. You know, it was
right
for me, though, I think it was just an aha moment with it. Like, I can dedicate seasons. You know, I had another deer that I scored out. There's a match set somewhere behind me that he scored out at 175. And we, my son and I had found his sheds the first part of February the one year. And then, as luck would have it, you know, I got him right away on trail camera the next year. You know, and this is on a big piece, and he's on a different edge of the piece. And then by the fall, it was the end of August that year, I had him on trail camera on the southern edge of the property, and then boom, there was a crop rotation that year, and he had shifted right off of the property, and he was gone. You know, so like all summer long, from the time that I found that buck sheds to the time that I got that last picture of him, I was dedicating time for that one buck, and then he shifted out of there anyways. Yeah. So it's gray, man. You can spend a lot of time hunting one deer, and it could be a crop rotation, it could be pressure, it could be another buck, and they shift them right out of there too. So that's why I kind of shifted my way of thinking with hunting.
Yeah. I'll say this. All of the deer that I dedicated an entire season to were deer that I had multiple years of history with. Right. Not a random buck that just, blew up or showed up in, you know, like that summer, and I was like, oh God, I hope he sticks around. No, I had years going, this buck will be back in here at this time, because I had multiple trail camera pictures of him, or I saw him dogging a doe in November the previous year, or I watched him grow up over, you know, one buck was like 6 years. I watched him, you know, he was a Boone and Crockett for over 6 years. Right. Yeah. And, I hit him when he was 200, and then, you know, that story. The other one is like just watching this little crab claw buck grow up. It was 3 years, you know, the first year that I got him, he was a 3 year old on camera, had the same little crab claw as a 9-pointer, not worth shooting. The next year probably would have shot him, but he just skirted me a lot. And then the year after, he was a no doubter, you know, a no doubter shooter. And, I dedicated an entire season to that buck, and, I saw him on the hoof, but I, just was in the wrong spot. And so the cons of dedicating an entire season, to a specific buck for me are, if you're going to do that, you have to be willing to, in my opinion, hunt on dates that you normally wouldn't do. And I say that because I like the rut, right? I like it when and this is why I've shifted strategies away from one particular buck to this doe strategy that we talked about, where now I'm hunting the doe groups. But if you're hunting one particular buck, you don't know, like the rut hits and everything becomes chaos. All of the patterning that you've done on that particular buck goes out the window, because he is now not on a routine anymore. When late October comes and he's just scent checking doe groups, and he's not going to this bed to food pattern like he used to. And so I've learned how to go to the doe groups, but that doesn't mean that he's going to that doe group. He's going to go to a different doe group. He's going to go to a different doe group on a different property, so forth and so on. And so, yes, going and hunting bucks during the rut is fun, because that's when you're going to have the best chance at bucks, in my opinion, but not individual bucks. And I didn't want to, like, I don't know if it was me not wanting to dedicate early season or late season time, because I spent all my vacation time during the rut, and it's hard to hunt a specific buck during the rut. It's almost like you got to get on them early to really get them before the rut hits and they go bananas, right? And so for me, there's two cons. One was, there's more than two, but one was that, right? The spastic nature in which they cover terrain in the rut. And the other one was when you dedicate your time, make sure that you know where you're at as a hunter. Because for me, I can remember I was chasing that hunter, the 1 year shipwreck. He was like 180, just like this beautiful chocolate rack. Like he had a gigantic split on his G2, and then he had another gigantic split on his G3 on the other side. Just a beautiful, like Larry Zach type buck that you would see on the cover of a magazine. And I had a 150 inch 4 year old 10 pointer just come right underneath my stand one day. Mm-hmm. And I just sat there and watched him, didn't even pick my bow up. And I'm just like, God, he would look really good on my wall right now in 2026. But I did that. And so at the moment, I thought what I was doing, like I was super confident at that point. That would have been like 2008. So I would have been 28 years old. And maybe ego was driving a little bit of my decisions. And so I was like, I was going big on some of those years. And so now I look back and I go, dude, I probably should have shot that buck, because that buck was at the time bigger than anything that I had had. And so I don't know. I look at that as a con, because I think hunting a single buck, if you haven't just crushed a whole bunch of 170s already, can mess with you a little bit mentally.
Yeah. I can agree. I'm actually looking at the broken rack of that deer, and it had me thinking while you're telling the story. For me, one of the biggest cons that I realized was when you're hunting a specific buck, guess what? You're not the only one hunting that specific buck. There's other people that, there's other people that know that deer's around. And what triggered this for me about this one is I remember I would have, gosh, on this 14 acres, 5-6 trail cameras. Mm-hmm. And none of them were cell cameras at that point. You know, they're all cameras I have to go check. And as luck would have it, this was part of like my, I would mow this yard, this property for these people once every 2 weeks. So I would just make that my rotation, and I would set those cameras up on my mowing path. So I would mow a path and I'd check cameras and everything. And when season came around though, what really got me I noticed people were messing with my cameras, right? Like the cameras were left open, or the cameras were shut off, or the SD cards were taken. And then as season approaches and I decide I'm going to start hunting there, then all of a sudden at peak times, I would have, you know, side-by-side drive along the property border, or four-wheelers come buzzing by. And it was like other people knew that deer was in the area. And it's sad, but that's also a con for me. Like, I kind of like... maybe I brought attention to that deer by frequenting that property more. Mm-hmm. But for me, I don't know. I just don't know if I could ever dedicate a season to it again, to one deer. I don't.
Yeah. It's tough, man, because the first time you do it, you are, like there's a lot of firsts for antler hunters or big buck hunters. The first time you pass the buck that you've shot the last 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. That 140 inch class, like for me, it was like this 140 class. And I started passing these deer where I was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, cause I look at myself as more of a killer than a trophy hunter, right? Like I love shooting deer, and last year's a perfect example. Like nothing, the buck I shot was like a 3-year-old 120 inch nothing. Like I don't want to degrade the deer and say that, but compared to what I've shot my entire life, compared to what I shot last year, it was just, I was in the moment and that's what I did. I just am not into dedicating, just because another thing is the time. Back when I was chasing all these deer, my kids were young, so they weren't They weren't inactivities. They weren't like, it takes a special person to dedicate a entire season to one deer, pass everything else. Like, you have to have these deer pegged as far as their movement is concerned. And I don't care if it's on private or public, because you can do the same thing if you put your time in on public land too. But you got to be willing to have this trigger control, and that is very tough. You got to be able to do crazy things, like take huge like when I was hunting that shipwreck buck, I was walking so far outside of the straight line I could have taken right to the tree stand. Like, I could have walked in a straight line, but I was playing the wind. I had my Ozonics. I was like running, like I was just taking all these extra precautions to go big J hook loops, trying to get in there. And, it was working. Like, I was having way more encounters with deer. I was seeing more deer on the hoof because I was taking all I was paying attention to all the little details. And then sometimes it just didn't pay off.
Yeah. I think, like you were saying, you know, with, there's that benchmark, like every guy has, you know, like, I'd like to shoot this one this year, you know? And like, so my question is how many times have you passed a buck knowing in your mind you did not want to shoot that buck, but then maybe a couple of weeks go by and you did shoot it?
This is crazy. I've never passed a deer that I ended up shooting later in the year.
So I've got one. He's right here where my thumb's at.
Mm-hmm.
So that deer in particular is this very, very cool looking deer. He's got split twos and stuff. He was a deer that was not on the hit list for that year, right? I had seen him, and I just had this knowing what's on this property, I was not going to shoot that deer.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks go by, and I'm back in the stand, and the deer comes out. And he loops around, and then he's, you know, 5 yards from me, and I shot him, and I go down to recover him and everything. And I'm down there, like, looking at him and everything. And behind me walks this, spike, but then behind him was, you know, 170 inch deer, you know, coming in. And that was bittersweet, 'cause it's like one of those moments where, like, I did not regret it, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was also like, what'd you just do? You know? And I feel like sometimes too, we get trapped in that whole inches thing. You know, you talk about it and it's like, well, I'm still proud of shooting this deer, you know, but it wasn't the deer that I wanted to climb that ladder with. You know, there was like so many years in a row you're shooting, you know, 130, 130, 130. And then it's like, and for some people, I mean, they're ecstatic with that, right? Yeah. And they're ecstatic shooting a doe. You know, it's just, where are you at in your hunting journey? And for me, it's become one of those things where I kind of gone backwards. Like, you know, I've shot a lot of nice deer and everything. No, I don't have that 200 inch deer. I would love to have that, but it's also not, I don't know if it's reality.
It's not reality. Yeah.
No, yeah. I just don't think it is, especially with kids and stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for me, I've just kind of regressed a little bit to where I just want to enjoy the hunt, you know? So, and I think that's part of like hunting one particular buck that changed it for me too, was it took some of the fun out of it. Once I realized, like, I hunted for 4 or 5 years, kind of not dedicating, you know, but I was definitely, he was on my mind all the time.
Right. Right.
And I didn't tag him.
Yeah. 100%. Let's talk now about how to hunt us one deer. Okay. And I'll start, and it starts this time of year, right? Cameras are out. You're getting inventory. In Iowa, I'm allowed to use mineral. So I have mineral stations, out. Like, if I was really dedicated, I'd have my trail cameras out already. Right. They would be out over mineral stations. If certain guys can feed deer, certain states you can feed them, or have a feeder or a food plot or whatever. And I would be documenting deer 24/7, 365 all year round if I was going to be dedicated to one deer. Right. And so that tells me that I'm going to go after, you know, and this isn't an Iowa thing or an Illinois thing. This is this tactic can be used anywhere in the nation, right? Just document the deer and go after the biggest one, right? And so whether you are in the summertime, now, if that buck shifts away and doesn't come back, then hopefully you have some kind of history with that buck that you can look back at old trail camera pictures and just be like, okay, this buck is going to come back this time of October or whatever. Like I said last week, the buck that I want to hunt this year, because they found the sheds on him, mm-hmm. On a neighboring property, he pops into my farm that I have access to roughly 3 or 4 times throughout the first 2 weeks of November, I think it was. And it's on specific winds, and I set a trail camera up for those specific winds. And my goal now is to be in those, in the timber. I have 2 tree stands set up for that. And the goal is to get in there on those wind conditions and those conditions at that time frame and sit as long as I need to hope that this buck shows up. Now, am I hunting that buck specifically this year? No, I'm not, because it's just tough to do. But that's what I would be doing. I would be documenting my farms and putting together little individual deer roadmaps, meaning, or little biographies about this deer. All right, here's a picture of him on last year. Here's a picture of him this year. Here's a picture of him in November. What is he doing? And then just like putting a map together of all of the places this particular deer is throughout the entire year, find the terrain features that he really likes to go through that are on a map. Say, do I have a tree stand in here where he's huntable? And then start the process of using that information from trail cameras, from visual sightings, even if it's like I'm pulling out of the farm and there he was in the headlights of my truck, document all of that. He was here coming out of this little finger to go feed at this point. And the more, long story short, it's gathering information about a particular deer, putting a hit out on him. And in order to do that, you got to document everything, where he's at, what time of year, and then put your tree stands in those locations, depending on what you're documenting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the one thing you said that was kind of eye-opening to me in comparison to how I would approach it mm-hmm. is you said that this deer that you could potentially hunt this year showed up certain times, right? You know, 4 or 5 times or whatever. That's what I put into my work with the cameras for 4 or 5 years of hunting that one particular buck, is I realized that he will be here on this date or in and around that date within a 2-day window. Mm-hmm. And he knows like when those does are going to, first doe is going to pop, the second doe and so on and so forth. But for me, if I wanted to go back and hunt a particular buck this year, let's just say I'm starting right now, I'm going to get out on the property. You can still do some scouting right now. It's not too late. It's just going to be buggy. It's going to be tall grasses and poison ivy and stuff. But I'm going to look for some trails and I'm going to try to find an intersection. I might look and see if there's a scrape that's open, like mm-hmm. a community hub scrape. And then I'm going to start hanging a couple cameras and then I'm going to document from here going forward with, okay, so is it a wind that he's moving in this direction? Is it a front that got him up? And then I'm going to start a new book for him. You know, like mm-hmm. this is 2026 and this is Deer X and this is when he moves. So my first step is, it's always the wind. right? Yeah. Because you got your access has to be key. And if I want to hunt this deer, I don't want to blow him out of there. So
yeah.
I'm always looking at is he predominantly moving in a certain direction on a certain wind?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the other deal. As the season starts to get closer, right? Like right now it's mineral stations or it's feed or it's food plots or it's a particular pasture that's got some wild clover growing up in it, whatever it is. I'm not the guy who came up with this. I learned this method from Bill Winky. Okay. And that's casting a wide net until you find the buck you want to go after. Then you take your trail cameras. And so that's the buck right there. That's the one that I want. And you take those trail cameras and you bring them closer in and closer in and closer in and closer in until essentially, and now with today's technology, it's so easy, right? You're just trying to get, when is this deer going to daylight? When is this deer going to daylight? And for the longest time for me, I had this, I called it the go. It was like the go button, time to go. And that would tell me when I need to get out into the timber, because there was this little pinch point. It was behind a house, behind the farmer's house. And it was like this little crossing, this washout crossing. And I didn't think that it didn't look like a ton of deer were there, but guess what? A ton of deer were there, right? So I hung my trail camera up and this was before cell cams, and I pointed it right there. And I came back 2 weeks later and dude, it was just a highway for deer coming through there off and on the entire season. Anyway, over the years, that was the spot that would tell me when it was time to get out in the woods, because I had all these nocturnal pictures of big bucks. And then somewhere around that October 27th timeframe on this particular farm, the big dogs started coming up. And they were in there at like 4:45, right at last light. And then every single day, it was more daylight activity. And that told me, okay, it's time to get in the woods. It's time to start at that close to about that time frame. And that's what I did.
So, well, I guess a question I would have, say you... you're on a new piece of property and mm-hmm. you right away this summer, you found a buck that you want to go after.
Yep.
When are you going after him? Like what
when
is
he tells, this? When the dude, I mean, it depends on how you do it, right?
I mean, this is a new property and you have no history of this property or anything. So are you going in 1st of October? Are you going in middle of October, pre-rut? What's your plan look like for this buck this year?
Well, the plan is, well, everybody's got cell cams these days.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm wrong with that. Maybe not everybody. I'll give you two options. One is, do you have cell cams or not? I'm hunting. I'm going in. I'm hunting. I'm going to hang a tree stand as I go in. Or maybe all I have is a ladder stand. I'm going to hunt on a field edge that has a big scrape on it or a trail coming out. I'm going to hang a trail camera there. Maybe I have one. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to see what's hitting that scrape, what's hitting that field edge, what time of day. Then I'm moving into the timber a little bit at a time. I'm going to be very cautious of my wind and I'm going to hunt my way in into what potentially could be the best terrain features, which would be, you're going to have to do some scouting. If I had a brand new farm and I got it October 1, I'm going in and scouting it immediately, right? If I bump deer out, I bump deer out, right? I'm going to drive my truck right up to the field edge. A lot of times when I do this, I leave my truck running. So it sounds like I'm not like trying to sneak up on anybody. I'm not trying to be quiet. I'm trying to get deer to leave way before I get close enough to them to where I'm spooking the shit out of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm scouting that particular property. I'm looking, I'm on Onyx or on Hunt Stand or whatever digital mapping app you use. I'm looking at topo lines. I'm looking for crit crossings. I'm looking for water. I'm looking for destination food. I'm driving the entire section. Like, I'm doing all of that right away. Now, if I'm a trail camera guy, and, you know, because today it's almost like people aren't even bothering buying non-cell cams anymore.
I don't think so.
That I'm taking my cell cams, so two or three of them or whatever, and I'm going to put them on a scrape, or I'm going to go in and right into a what looks to be a big crit crossing or fence jump or something like that, some kind of sign or terrain feature. And I'm going to point my trail camera in that direction and I'm going to say, okay, this is where, and then you just start watching. Right. And so what trail cameras do, it allows you to be quote unquote better at guessing when to go into the woods. Right. As opposed to just guessing 100% blind guess when to go into the woods to hunt this particular buck. Trail cameras are going to tell you so much.
They really do. I mean, obviously woodsmanship and being able to read sign and stuff teaches you some stuff. But one thing I took away from this, so you just gave us an example of like what you would do on one particular buck this year on a virgin piece that you've never hunted. So now I'm playing like devil's advocate and stuff. Does that make it seem like where you're at with your properties you have now today, not hunting a specific buck? I don't want to use the word lazy, but are we lazy in knowing what we know about our properties? Knowing when to go in, does it take the enjoyment out of it? And does it make it just, you're kind of complacent and, well, I'm going to go, you know, the first week of November because I already know all this. This is when it's going to happen. These are when the deer move through.
No,
does that change it, you know, versus like kind of what you were saying with this buck? It seemed like there was a lot more excitement going into that one buck this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. If you know your property, you know your property. I mean, that doesn't mean the excitement level's going to go down. Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm a 45-year-old who's got three kids. All of them are at activities. I own my own business. I have to make my wife happy. I can't leave it, you know, like throughout the entire week and just go scout.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Shit doesn't get done. And then I got to come back to a crazy household. People are resenting me. Like it's unrealistic for me to do that. Now the 28 unmarried version of myself, that dude's out there, right? He doesn't need cell cams per se, cause he's out there. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who's hunting October 1 and he's in there looking for these bucks. Right. He's looking at fresh sign. He's looking at fresh scrapes. He's watching the wind direction. He's not waiting for the best wind direction. He's designing an access route into that area based off of whatever is happening that day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So is it, would you say at 28 versus 45 that it's easier to hunt that one buck then than it is now?
Well, you know, I didn't care. There's no schedule.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't schedule the rut. Mm-hmm. I just, after work, I went hunting, or before work, I went hunting, or I called in sick, or I told my boss, dude, I got a big dog moving right now. I got to go get him. And nobody gave a shit. Dude, I was at a point in my life back then where if they fired me, I would not have cared at all. It's like, oh, dude, well, if you don't come in today, we're going to let you go. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, go find somebody else. I got bucks to hunt. that was my mentality back then. Yeah. Now it's way different. Like, I don't give a shit as much. And I'm also not chasing one buck anymore.
What if there was that one special buck that showed up and you're like, oh my gosh, I know I can get in on. Does that change like your work schedule? Does that change maybe how you approach it?
Yeah. Of course. Okay. If it's a once in a lifetime buck, then I'm making once in a lifetime decisions.
Right.
On that. I'm showing this picture to my wife. I'm saying this buck, you know, like this buck only, these types of bucks only come by once every 10 years. Right. Right? So like the only time I've seen a ton of 200-inch deer, But having them on my farm and being regular in the last, I'm trying to think of how many 200 inch bucks that I've had on my farm, or even Boone and Crockett caliber deer.
Yeah.
Been on a particular farm at one time has only been like, dude, I want to say two times, once every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even a 170 inch deer, that I, the last time I shot and did not kill was what, like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I hit a 170 inch typical 10 and I didn't kill him. And then he was killed the next week by a, or two or three weeks later by a muzzleloader hunter during the late season, right? Whatever. But I'm my decision-making at 28 versus now is complete. I have to be more precise.
Right.
Because I have to, but not here. And here's why. If I'm telling the wife, hey, listen, the next week I'm going to be gone hunting, that means I have to hunt those days no matter what.
Yep.
Right. As opposed to, I could be picky back then if I wanted to. I wasn't, but if I wanted to, I could have said, you know what? In 2 days, there's going to be a wind shift. I'm going to stay out of there and then I'm going in on this wind shift. Or, hey, there's a huge storm coming, a cold front coming. I'm going to hop in there right before that. And then after that cold front, and then I'm going to get some high pressure and I'm going in, right? Yeah. As opposed to now, I have to, like, I'm hunting no matter. And that's why I've never paid attention to a moon phase, because it didn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hunting no matter what's going on. I don't care if it's 85 degrees or if it's 8 degrees, I have to hunt.
Right.
On that week, that next week. So I'm going in. Like I'm going in on it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I just, yeah. I think, you know, going forward, you know, if you're after one particular buck, if you have the time to dedicate to it, you're going to realize that you can pattern a deer, and then you're going to realize that, you know, there's a killable time for them, and then there's the rut, and then there's a killable time for them again. And that's what I realized with it too. As far as, like, you know, caliber deer and everything, I don't personally think I've ever seen a 200 inch deer, you know? Yeah. So for me to say that I've even had an opportunity to chase one, I haven't, you know?
Yeah.
I just try to enjoy it for what it is now, you know, and I kind of look at it like, I'm going to use my odds. I'm going to use my 1 week or my trip or whatever it may be. And that's when I'm going to hunt. And I'm going to try to take my kids out as much as I can.
Yeah. But we're not talking about that, are we, Jason?
No.
We're talking about trying to shoot one big giant buck.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. And so we're going in for the kill, right? So I'll just kind of finish what I've done in the past. So that trail camera net just keeps shrinking, and it keeps shrinking, and it keeps shrinking, and it keeps shrinking until you got this buck multiple times throughout the day. Maybe he's nocturnal on all those times. Now we're starting to get closer to daylight. Boom, time to go in and hunt him. And so I was using heavily using trail cameras in the ST card days. Right now I don't hunt one buck anymore, like one particular buck anymore. I'm hunting like the top five deer in an area. Anyway, so I'm documenting that buck, but it doesn't start on that year for me, because I've already documented this buck as a 3-year-old. I've already documented him as a 4-year-old. Maybe I had already passed this buck multiple times. So I know what route he runs throughout the course of the year, right? So I'm saying to myself, okay, I got him in velvet in July. I know he's alive. Then I go back and I scrub the data that I have from previous years. And I say, okay, I know that this is his favorite route to run. There's, you know, I have him on 3 trail cameras, and he runs these 2 ridges that come to a point, and or these 2 drainages that come to a point that drop down into a field. And that's where all the sign is. If I play my cards right, this is where it's going to happen. I did that in 2020, where I was able to triangulate a buck's position through trail camera data. And I said, this is where it's going to happen. And it, sure enough, that's where it happened, right? A big, wide, five-year-old, 100 high 140s, eight-pointer, really wide, my widest buck. I think he's 24-inch inside spread or something like that. Anyway, so I've just documented all these, even these three-year-olds. So now I know, oh, okay, this buck, this particular buck is a giant now. It's just, it's almost like you just step into that buck, right? You're documenting. And the goal, like for the guys who hunt the one buck, really all of it, all of what it is you step into it now, right? You watched him and then you try, you chase him. Maybe you kill him. Maybe you don't. Let's say you kill him. And then what you've done is you've documented all these other deer as well. And so now you're chasing a different deer the next year. And that particular buck has his own, travel area, core area that you've been able to identify. And so what do? You hop in, you step into that buck as well. So all you're doing, if you're hunting one buck, is it's not about necessarily going in and finding him. You've already found him, like using trail cameras. All you're doing now is stepping in to him. Like if you're not using trail cameras and you spot a buck, let's say you're driving the roads and it's this piece of public ground that is 5,000 acres and you see this one velvet buck in the field and you're like, dude, that's a 170-inch buck. I'm going after him this year. And not being able to run trail cameras, that it, everything gets harder at that point because now you're guessing as opposed to, but you have to be able to hunt a lot too at that point because you step in and you got to, okay, I saw him from the tree 200 yards that way. I'm going to move in. And then it's just like all these little micromanaging things as opposed to being set up and stepping into that particular deer.
One last question, do you think that all the years of trying to hunt one particular buck and then triangulating all that information, gathering all that information, that you've actually just discovered like a good spot from year to year?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where some of my best historical rut,
right?
Like rut funnels or rut stands that I don't move at all. That's where they're at.
Right. Right. So I think it's just, you know, if you do put all that knowledge together and all that information together, mm-hmm. I think you can actually just say, hey, that's a good spot for a good buck, you know, in general, you know, versus like saying, oh, it looks good over here, mm-hmm. you know, or hey, it's a rut and there's a good population over here. I mean, you may, because you believe in that, don't you? I mean, like a good spot's a good spot.
A good spot is a good spot. Now, I also believe it changes a little bit every year. Like if somebody comes in and logs it or a tree falls down,
right?
Or you know, a tree dies and more sun gets, like I think like the terrain doesn't change as much, the vegetation might change, which would impact that a little bit, but not too terribly much, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but outside of that, really then what it does is once you step into that spot, then the next thing you have to do is have trigger control, which is equally as hard to do.
Yep, it right? is.
It's just like, oh God, there's a big buck. There's a big buck. There's a big buck.
Right here. You know, it's like I said, you know, I passed him up and then 2 weeks later I shoot him. And what do I see coming down the trail as I'm getting ready to dress this deer out? You know, a deer that I was actually after. But I've been able to put, you know, together years of good hunts out of a good spot by triangulating everything because of putting all that effort in for one particular buck too. So,
yep. 100%. And really, I don't want to say it's harder. The hard part is not shooting any other deer.
Right.
Right. It's being patient. And if you figured out a deer's pattern at that point, it becomes time in tree stand.
Right.
That's like, it's almost like a baseball statistic, right? That, TIT, time in tree stand, and or blind or whatever. And you have to be out there so that when this buck comes, like if it was a north wind that this buck came through, you better be out there on every single north wind
Right.
No matter what.
Yep.
Right. But yep. You have to, going and hunting one particular buck comes with its own set of scheduling challenges, time challenges. It's almost like you're not a hunter anymore. You become a assassin.
Well, and you have to have patience with it. I 100%. Mean, you know, you can't just dive in just because he's there and he's the biggest buck you're ever going to shoot, or he's the coolest buck you're ever going to shoot. I mean, you definitely have to have patience with it, because it's not like you put in all that work just to throw it away.
100%. 100%. And really, that's where it ends, my friends. Yep. Got to have that patience, because if you don't, then it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So I am kind of past that stage in my life. I think that if there's another caliber of buck that shows up at some point throughout the year, then I will go out and try again. You know, if there's 170 inch or bigger deer that really just takes my breath away, I might go do it. Because yeah. I got a lot of deer heads on the wall downstairs already. I'm not necessarily looking to keep putting 120 inch bucks on the wall.
Right.
But I also, I love big bucks too. Right. And so if one shows himself and I think he's killable and I have the ability to get in there and kind of make it happen, then I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yes, sir. Well, great conversation today. If you guys could do us a huge favor, go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you download the How to Hunt Deer podcast, or if you're listening on YouTube, make sure you guys leave comments, give us a 5-star rating, leave your reviews, whatever it is. I would really appreciate it, especially if you're listening to this particular episode. Maybe go to the How to Hunt Deer Instagram page, and when I post clips from this particular episode, maybe leave some comments about things that have worked for you if you have ever tried to hunt one particular buck. So good vibes, everybody. Jason, have a good rest of your day,
you too.
We will talk to you guys next week.